I walk up to go to the meeting. What a mess. Absolutely crazy. 4 minutes late today.
4 minutes late.
You know, I work. I touched the mini pump like 3 times the time after the family.
Yeah.
We pick up all the equipment, and it closes. Sorry about that. At least we are taping the show. It'll sound exactly how I don't hear it in the headphones.
I can't hear anything in the headphones. Crank it.
There
we are.
Now I can hear in the headphones. It should sound exactly like that on the tape anyway. Let's find out. I don't know. We'll find out after.
Listen, we're sorry, okay?
We are. We're terribly sorry. I don't know what's going on.
We've been killing ourselves trying to figure out what's going on here.
The show must go on.
Yeah, we just can't sit around playing with a sound card all night long. I mean, you tested this thing.
I tested it 3 times.
We tested it together last weekend.
Yep. You listened. Scott K. listened.
It sounded phenomenal.
Yeah, and it sucks now. I don't get it. I just don't get it. Internet radio, live internet radio, what fun. Ghostly Talk is live on Pioneer Radio. That's pioneer.rolo.net every Sunday at 7 or 7.12 p.m. Eastern Time.
7 or 7.12.
Well, 7.12 this time, yeah. When we're on the air, we are in the chat room. If you go to the ghostlytalk.com website or the pioneer.rolo.net website,
yeah,
there's links to chat, and you can chat with us in the chat room and tell us how clipping we are,
how badly we're
clipping.
Yeah, sure. While the show is going on tonight, we are beta testing this basically now. I mean, this could be called a beta test because we've never done the brand new sound card first time.
I tested it 3 nights, and it worked beautifully those nights.
Yeah,
maybe something about Sunday. Maybe the server has like a Sunday phobia or something like that.
Oh my God, Sunday's the day these guys do that stupid radio show.
Yeah, and I gotta pump
all this information through
all
these people to listen to.
Into the world. Why in the world should I continue?
So the server decides to go on a cigarette break.
Do you remember the Douglas Adams wrote and they were talking about it in the chat room, wrote the end of the galaxy, no, the galaxy and the universe and everything or something.
Oh, yeah.
Life,
okay.
The universe. I don't know, he wrote this series of books anyway. The first one, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And in there, they had a robot. And the robot was just chronically depressed. And I have a feeling that that was a precursor to our server. Our server is just like that robot. And it just gets
server's looking pretty beat up after the show tonight, I think.
We did take a picture of the old sound card, though.
We have that.
We're going to
put that up on the website.
Yeah, you can
tonight,
see the old sound card.
You get to see the old sound card.
And just how massive and how broken
down
it is.
You get to see the trumpet squadron behind it firing the rifles, playing taps.
So,
yeah.
But anyway, if we clip, we apologize in advance. But
we're trying to work out a bug out of this. You know, when you grow, this kind of stuff happens. And we're going through a lot of changes right now in the show. Trying to meet demand, so to say.
Go to pioneer.rolo.net or go to ghostlytalk.com and you can interact with everybody and tell us just how bad we're doing. Why not? You can also email ghostlytalk@ghostlytalk.com and say, your show is unlistenable.
Sorry.
And I certainly wouldn't mind. You
know, it's getting like this. So what? We're working on it. Just give us some time.
Well, you have a stalker. We might as well get a show stalker, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, get somebody like, oh my God, I can't believe you guys are doing that. Anyway, we've got like a totally awesome show. If our guest calls, we're hoping that Peter Novak will call in and we'll have him on. He's going to talk about the separation? I don't know. The
separation of the soul
and
your body.
Separation of the soul, yeah.
I want him to really put it in his terms.
He says that there are parts to the soul, individual parts of the soul. So like even though you think of it as one thing, because think of the word soul, it's singular. There's one thing, one personality, one whatever. It's not like that, evidently. And I had alluded to that on a previous show, and I can't wait to talk to him about that, because in the Jewish FAQ, if you do a search on Google for Jewish FAQ, frequently asked questions.
Yeah, that was a long time ago, actually.
Yeah, in that frequently asked questions, there's a part in there where it says that upon death, the soul actually splinters into many pieces. So you can actually, you know, you then go all over the place. You know, you're not necessarily just one little piece. Or
uh-huh.
So I'd love to get a handle on that and learn from Peter Novak just what's up with that. But for now, I want to talk about while we're waiting for him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I want to talk about what I was doing previous to last week's disastrous show, and it was disastrous not because of turn your mic on because you were with me. It was disastrous, not because of the guest, Winston Wu, who is phenomenal.
Wonderful.
And
wonderful
he will
guy.
Be back. When he gets back from his vacation or business trip, whatever, he's abroad right now. And when he comes back, we're going to get him on the show and talk about skeptics.
Exactly.
I want to talk about skeptics.
It really
bummed really,
out
really, really
that really blew up on us.
Yeah, so we're going to have him back on. And he's already agreed, and we just cannot wait to talk to Winston Wu. It wasn't disastrous because of the guest. It was disastrous because of equipment failure and other things. But, last week's disaster show, we talked about this in the first, 30 minutes or 15 minutes or so.
Uh-huh.
We talked about what Will and I did during the week of Halloween. You know, the week preceding Halloween, we were in the Holly Hotel every single night for this seance kind of thing that they put on. And we met a lot of really, really cool people.
Yeah, we're celebrities.
Yeah, that was really, really cool. There was actually people there who had heard of Ghostly Talk and who listened to Ghostly Talk, and that was just that totally awesome. And I have pictures in my email. I haven't been able to send them around to everybody, but I have pictures in my email from somebody who took photos in the Holly Hotel, and they captured orbs and stuff like that. I'm gonna have to download them and show everybody because I did get those emails, you guys. So
yeah, we did get those emails. Just been between server crashes and
And
obvious
else.
Other things going on.
Everything else.
The trials of everyday lives.
Yeah.
Trials of everyday
trials
lives.
And tribulations.
Yeah.
But, so we went to the Holly Hotel for these seances. Things happened. And I urge everybody who is an adult to go to my journal on the Ghostly Talk site. It's at www.ghostlytalk.com. Don't read it if you're easily offended, because there were some other things that went on at the Holly Hotel that I was not happy with. But I went there for a reason. I went there for free, right, every single night to help out Kelly, who's the psychic medium, and to also, I guess, promote Ghostly Talk and Michigan Ghostbusters and stuff like that. But I also went there to be in a known haunted place during the week of Halloween. I was not disappointed. There were many things that happened that were just paranormal. I mean, it's really interesting because you can say, okay, this thing, and I'll describe some of them, but this thing that happened, there can be explanations for it. And for almost every one of them, yes, there could be explanations for it, which is just really, really bizarre, because I witnessed many of these events with my own eyes, and other times I heard firsthand from folks, you know, oh, this happened, and I'm like, this is so bizarre. It just makes no sense. And that's the cool stuff, being in a known haunted place, having this stuff happen. And it just happens. And I was looking for it to happen, but I wasn't expecting much. But what I got was a lot of cool stuff. The very first night we got there, right, we met Sherry.
From Gemini Moon.
From Gemini Moon. We met her. Well, I had met her once before at a psychic fair, but, you know, we actually got to talk with her finally. And I am absolutely 100% serious. I experienced a time warp that evening.
I was there. I was a part of it.
And you experienced it too, Will, didn't you? I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but all of us were shocked because we went up to the bar because we were in the basement. That's where our headquarters was for the week. And we went up to the bar because they have a bar on the main floor. We go up to the bar, and then we go back down to I got ahead of myself. We go up to the bar.
You said another time warp.
Drinking. Yeah. We were drinking. Sherry had, like, what, two blues? I had, of course, a couple of Diet Pepsis. You had what?
Pepsi.
A Pepsi. So we were drinking. We were talking. We were, you know, there was cigarettes all around the place. I mean, it was just like we were just having a blast. We talked and talked and talked. We talked about many things. Do you remember what we talked about?
About UFOs. We talked about just
the bank vault.
Yep.
We talked about the bank vault for quite a while, because Sherry told us the story of when she bought a building in, like, Prescott, Michigan, and it had a bank vault in it. So she investigated the maker of the door of the bank vault. And so she told us all about that. Oh,
we have a call.
Let's see if that's our guest.
Ghostly Talk. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm wrong number. No, I'm joking.
Oh, my gosh. That is our co-host. Our co-hostess with the mostest. That's Karma.
Hey, what's going on?
Yeah, it's me.
Hell yeah.
I'm at my home.
You're at your home?
Yeah.
How you feeling?
Doing all right. It's getting better and better every day. So.
Well, we're glad to hear from you.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
We heard you tried to call Will, but he was already in bed that night. It was like 2 in the morning.
Yeah, you know what? That was on accident, too.
Oh. Well, normally it wouldn't matter.
You thought you were a stud, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
We're all, like, pretty much we're night people, I guess, and a lot of us are always up. You know,
yeah.
But so normally if I got
to
call it
too. Probably thought I was trying to make a booty call or something.
You don't get now. Oh. Woo. Hey, huh. I know this stuff goes on in offices, but I didn't know I had a ghostly talk.
Oh, it's crazy. You know what goes on.
I guess. All the stuff.
The thing behind that is I lost my cell phone, and I was going through. Thank God for itemized billing, because you get all your numbers and everything, so I'm trying to figure out my friend's phone number, and I called out an accident, so.
See, she was trying to
call his house?
She was trying to get her friend on the phone, but she ended up calling you on accident, yeah. Pretty fast.
Yeah. What a mistake.
Sorry, Will.
Yeah, so how's the show going?
So far, so good. You're live, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
People are wondering about you.
Yeah.
I have to apologize. I'm going through some something with the accident. I have to go through 4 weeks of physical therapy, and it's suggested that I don't do anything extracurricular.
Well, we wholeheartedly understand, and we're all pulling for you. And you've missed some really cool stuff. For example, we have a fellow who goes to the Ghostly Talk website named Coconut Monkey.
Yes.
Coconut Monkey drew this, or I don't know if you draw or render, it's this digital art, and it's got the four of us as ghosts coming out of the Ghostly Talk website screen.
Oh, that's cool.
Totally amazing stuff. And you're in it. You're one of the ghosts coming out of the screen.
Yeah,
so.
he made it obvious.
Yeah, you have eyelashes.
You have eyelashes, yeah.
Yeah. And,
a real nice set of eyelashes. Beautiful set of eyelashes.
Yeah.
A wondrous set of eyelashes.
I'm actually
on
Ghostly Talk Ghost right now because I'm not there.
Yeah, well, yeah, you
got to
get back.
Yeah, until you come back because we're all rooting for you. We put everything behind you. We want you to get better. And get back here behind the microphone.
I know. And, I told Scott that if I went there, I just wouldn't be myself, And I don't like the fake things. It wouldn't be me,
Well, don't.
Yeah, we don't want you distracted. We want you
focused.
The way you are, we just absolutely adore you. And I know a lot of listeners do because they email, what's up? And in that little shout box on the website.
Yeah.
Okay. Where'd Karma go? And now they'll say, oh, she called in. Yeah. So
you're alive. Proof.
I'm not fired, right?
No.
No, are you kidding? Everybody's asking about you.
Don't you have to actually make money to be fired?
Yeah. Everybody's asking about you, and we want you to get better so bad.
Really, you do.
Because we want you back here with us laughing and joking and hopefully imparting information and enjoying doing Ghostly Talk again.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Well.
Excellent.
You need to get a hold of me this week. You can call me at 2 o'clock in the morning. That's cool.
Okay.
I'm like, hey, what's up, baby? Yeah.
Hey, baby.
Hey, it's Karma. Oh, hey, what's up?
Oh.
I'll be like, is this an accident?
Did you accidentally put me in your phone or something? Yeah.
Definitely call me this week. We'll get together.
Well, I don't want to tell you phone line stuff.
Yes, because we've got Peter Novak calling in.
Peter Novak calling in here within minutes.
So, all right, excellent. Then we'll talk to you soon, I hope, Karma.
All right.
All right.
Take it easy.
Thanks for calling in.
Too.
Bye, hon. We'll see you later, all right?
Bye-bye.
Bye. That was nice hearing from her.
That was awesome.
It was nice hearing from her.
I'm so glad she called in.
Yeah, so
now, we were up there talking and talking and talking like crazy.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we all just felt it. Like, oh my gosh, we've been here for a long time. We run downstairs.
Ghostly Talk.
Hi, this is Pete Novak.
Hey, Pete Novak.
Awesome. We're live on the air right
now. Hold on, Pete. We're going to go to break, okay?
We're going to go to break.
Right now,
and
we're
going to
stay on the line. Don't move. Okay, guys, hang tight. This is the most organized Ghostly Talk ever, obviously. So just hang tight. We'll be right back in a few minutes, okay?
Oh.
Okay, I think we got the lyrics straight now.
Yeah, I understand that button doesn't push.
Yeah.
That one button. You know,
the one button.
Play the music the right way.
Yeah.
That button. It's like, you know, what does it say here?
It says you're an idiot.
It says level.
Level.
Yeah. And that's the one.
And that's Mondo Latin for moron. We forgot to push the button.
Well, we did push like 8 million buttons.
Yeah, we've just bored. This board is just laughing at us right now.
Yeah, it's like, oh, these guys have no clue.
But this is cool, because you people out there are hearing, like, how all the...
the video thing is live. This is live.
Yeah, you know, and like, you guys actually get to hear firsthand, you know, what's going on here. And this is, I mean, the whole saga itself of the melting sound card has become, like, in folklore, ghostly talk history.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, okay, we're slaying the sound card now. I mean, come
yeah, on. It was pretty wild. So we did, like I was saying before the break, we did experience that thing. We had thought that we were up there for, like, an hour and that we were late letting them know that the seance was over.
Yeah.
But it was only, in actuality, 15 minutes. So I personally experienced a vortex.
Wow.
Like a 45-minute distortion in time. And so did Will. And that's the end of that story. If you want to read more, go to ghostlytalk.com, and you can you can read my journal. Skip over any that has the, you know, in the top, like, you know, parental warnings and stuff,
yeah,
in case you're easily offended. But
oh God.
But I listed.
Can I say one thing?
Okay.
No, go right ahead. You're done. No, say after you're done.
Well, I was just gonna say that I did in an earlier to that adult-oriented journal. I did indeed list 6 paranormal things that happened. Although I said there were 7. I only listed 6 of them, but, you know, hey, it's
wow.
A journal. I get to do what I want in my own journal.
Wow.
So what do you want to say before we bring on Peter?
Lighten up, people. That's all I want to say.
Very, very well said.
Lighten up.
Very well said.
And if you got a problem, bring it. I have no problem with that at all. I'll leave it at that. That's all I want to say. That's all I want. I don't want to make it. I don't want to draw it out.
I know. I don't blame you.
Bring it. Bring everything you got, because you're going to need it.
Do you realize? Okay, now we're just ghostly talk. We're in the basement,
we're
right?
In the basement.
We're ghost hunters who decided, okay, hey, we can take advantage of the, you know, technology of the future, this internet stuff. Mm-hmm. We can team up with you know, people in England, you know, at Pioneer Radio. We can team up with all kinds of people doing these paranormal shows. We can put together this awesome station, Pioneer, and we can, you know, use the power of the internet to talk to people and to tell people what we do, ghost hunting and things like that. Of course, it's changed over the years. It's changed to where we're bringing guests on and enjoying ourselves and learning.
Yeah.
I'm learning more, I think, from the show. Than
and more of us as people are coming through now.
Yeah, and so we're doing all this stuff, and that makes us somehow targets.
Yeah.
I don't understand it, but
now, you know,
imagine what, like, Clyde Lewis
and
Art Bell and...
And I feel horrible for those
what they go through, I can't even imagine.
But like I said, I mean, that's fine. We got to deal with it. That's part of doing this sort of thing.
Lighten up or bring it on.
Lighten up or bring it on.
There you go.
Have to do.
That's it.
I'm not hard to get a hold of, so feel free. Drop me a line anytime. We'll get together. We'll hang out, and I'll make a fool of you.
Anyway. Excellent. Let's get on with the important stuff.
We have Peter Novak here today.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Absolutely awesome.
Peter Novak was a former... psychological counselor. Peter Novak walked away from patient care to devote himself to the full-time study of death and the afterlife. He has since spent more than 15 years researching mankind's cultural legends and modern phenomenological reports. Thank you.
Oh, very good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I didn't slaughter that word. Of life after death. He is the acclaimed author of the 1997 groundbreaking book, The Division of Consciousness, which established him as an authority on soul duality and binary soul cultures. He has been a popular guest on more than a dozen syndicated TV and radio shows, a featured speaker at conferences and symposiums in America, Canada, and Europe, and has had several major papers published on the psychology of afterlife phenomena. His second book on division theory and the binary soul doctrine, The Lost Secret of Death, Our Divided Souls and the Afterlife, has just been released. Novak has plans for a third book in the series, which will introduce his hypothesis of a 26,000-year evolutionary cycle related to the binary soul doctrine, and explore the likelihood of an imminent mass shift of consciousness similar to that proposed in Julian Jayne's book, The Origins of Consciousness, in The Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind. Novak lives in the Chicago area with his wife and daughter, where he continues to explore the binary soul doctrine and regularly corresponds with BSD students around the world.
Does this mean we're going to talk about life after death?
Well, why don't we ask
on Ghostly Talk?
It's crazy.
Finally.
I don't know. We're going to talk about something like that. Wow.
That's awesome. Hey, Peter Novak, thank you for coming on and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Like a fun show.
You got in a little early, guys, before the break, so you hung out with us during the break, so you got to hear all the fun that goes on of us pushing buttons and screaming and yelling at each other.
So that always adds, I think,
yeah,
to people's experience, and not listeners, but the guests, yeah.
Yes.
you now, I had read up a bit, and you talk about the binary division of the soul, things like that. I remember the reason this intrigues me so much is because I tried to wrap my mind around the in like the sock.culture.jewish or something like that frequently asked question.
Yeah, we talked about this a long time ago.
A long time ago on the show, I had talked about in that frequently asked questions list. They had talked about, you know, they're obviously talking about Jewish faith and things like that. They talk about how when upon death, the soul divides into many different facets of itself and goes out and about. And I tried to wrap my brain around it.
Well, it's hard to do.
Yeah, I had quite a problem, and I still only am, you know, just fathoming it. I don't have, like, an actual clue what they mean and what it means to me. So that's why I am so glad that you're on the show, because you can explain this to us.
Oh, I'll try. actually, the idea that we have two souls or multiple souls is really, it's very, very difficult for people to comprehend or accept. Basically, our culture went through something very similar about 100 years ago when Freud and Jung came up with the idea that the mind was divided into a conscious and an unconscious. Basically, you know, that's old news. That's 100 years old, but most people today still don't believe it. They still don't believe that their minds are divided into two parts.
Well, you don't have direct experience other than when you go to sleep, you're unconscious, right?
Right.
And when you're awake, you're conscious. So that may be even, you know, that I think is easier to grasp, although people don't, you know, usually consciously think about it.
We walk around thinking that we are divided creatures. Now, an extension of what Freud and Jung discovered is kind of like psychology discovered this 100 years ago. But then about 20 or 30 years ago, science started backing up. They said, well, we're not sure if that's true or not. But then they started doing neuropsychological studies of the brain, and they discovered that there's actually two different consciousnesses in the brain, one in the left hemisphere, one in the right hemisphere. They've done studies where they've had to cut the little connective tissue between the two halves of the brain, and they found out there were actually two different people in there at the same time, neither of which knew about the other one. And that's what we all are. We're walking around with two different minds, two different souls in our bodies all the time. But we don't appreciate it. We're not aware of it because they tend to blend in our consciousness.
How come I think of myself as one person or one consciousness?
It's a very, very important question. I think that the answer is because if we consciously, to realize that we are divided creatures, challenges our sense of integrity, challenges our sense of wholeness, our sense of being healthy, our sense of being in charge of our own minds. It is a realization that we vehemently reject because it is very threatening to us. When Freud and Jung told the scientific community that we have a whole half of our mind that no one knows about, the scientific community rejected that because they had just gotten to the point they thought, okay, the human mind is God. It can control the world. And then Freud came along and said, you can't even control your own mind. It was very challenging then. It's still a very challenging idea.
Oh, definitely. I know that there's a lot of the folks that we hang out with, and I'm sure that the folks who listen to Ghostly Talk are actually probably fairly familiar with the roles of the right brain and the left brain, and how, you know, the right brain is creativity and things like that. The left brain is very you know, like number systems.
I think rationality.
Yeah. So the folks who listen to Ghostly Talk are quite you know, I'm sure that they're familiar because they all listen to shows like Resmerized and Ghostly Talk and things like that. So they're used to knowing that there's two, you know, like the right brain controls this, the left brain controls that.
They left more idea to them. It's a good thing.
So there's folks out there listening who do know these kinds of things, but what's the goal? Like, is there a way to get in touch with both of these selves? Because evidently we're two selves in one body.
Certainly. I think that the entire universe is urging. You know, I think the universe itself has two parts to it, and those two parts reflected in the two parts within ourselves. And I think that the universe is always trying to reunite those two halves. And for us to reunite our two halves is no more complicated than trying to have integrity, trying to be true to yourself, not denying when you have ideas and feelings and insights that brush up from the deeper part of your mind. If you do not immediately reject them and deny them, then you are integrating yourself. You are making the two halves of yourself a whole thing. I think that was actually the goal of an awful lot of religions a long time ago. I think it's still a goal of some religions. It is the forgotten goal of more religions.
So so basically, if we just pay attention to this stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's all about paying attention. It's all about being conscious of what's going on inside your own mind. It's just all a matter of not ignoring the parts of your own self.
Well, you're talking about letting these thoughts come to you and letting them, I mean, acknowledging them.
Now, not necessarily letting them take over your whole life, but
okay.
At least acknowledging them and considering their worth. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, for example, we've discussed this before on the show, too, that there's things that come up in my mind.
That you would never let out.
Yes. I mean, I think that happens. That goes for lots of people.
But look at road rage and things like that, of course.
Oh, God, yes. Somebody cuts me off. I mean, I think about 50 horrible, disgusting things I'd like to see happen to them.
Right. And
I suppress that and go, you know, well, I think it went that further, though, where I'm like, okay, I could do these 50 horrible, disgusting things to this person because I'm so angry with them for trying to take the front bumper off my car, but I suppress that and go, you know, I can't do that. It's not the kind of person I am.
I think that's suppression. I think that's acknowledgement. You are saying, yes, I do realize these things are inside of me, and you say, well, if I do this, then that will happen. You are not the kind of person that is going to be controlled by those impulses because you have acknowledged them. I think the people that end up in the newspapers because of road rage are the people that have suppressed them so severely they weren't even aware of them until they took them over.
Okay.
That makes a lot of sense. That really does.
And I didn't really, I mean, I guess it's just a matter of defining what goes on. Like I said, I think I speak for a lot of people here, too, that things come up in my mind sometimes where I'm like, my God.
I'm embarrassed about that.
I thought of that.
Yeah.
Jung said that we all have, you know, a dark side to ourselves. We all have a shadow. He called it a shadow. And the important thing is not to deny the shadow, to acknowledge his existence, and to try to integrate it into your life in as healthy and whole a way as you can. Because if you don't acknowledge it, if you don't try to integrate it into your life, then there will be moments, there will definitely be moments where it just says, okay, I'm in charge now, get out of the way, I'm going to do what I want.
Okay.
So it comes back in its own version of road rage and just takes over you.
Well, you could equate that basically with the fact that, I mean, men are typical, men have this characteristic where, I mean, men like to bottle things up.
Right.
And not say anything. And then when the floodgates open, oh my God, everybody drowns. You just blow your top. Is that somewhat similar to what we're talking about here, where if you try to suppress that so much, you keep suppressing that, like you said, it'll just take over,
and
then people are in trouble.
These are parts of yourself, and every part of yourself will express itself in your life sooner or later. The only dangerous ones are the ones you can't see. The only reason you can't see them is because you don't allow yourself to see them.
Now I understand. I honestly...
So if you're actively suppressing it, you acknowledged that it was there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I think about it all the time. Why am I thinking about this? Why am I thinking about this?
If you're really thinking about them, then you may also try at some point to channel that aggression, that resentment into a different activity in a more safer way at a later time.
That's what we do this radio show.
Well, I mean, as a matter of fact, I think this, what you're talking about may actually be being acknowledged quite a bit, because I know that they have those, they sell those punching bag things for the offices now.
No, my favorite's the Dammit doll.
The Dammit doll?
Have you seen the Dammit doll before?
No.
Oh, it's just a doll, and you grab it, and you take it by the legs, and you go, Dammit, 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 and you blow the table with it.
I've never heard of that.
Oh, it's great. I have one.
I need one.
One like
But yeah, but so like they're selling stuff to allow people an outlet for that kind of thing. Is there a way to, do you think there's a way to, like you were saying, Peter, to redirect that into a more positive thing other than punching a bag or pounding a doll on your desk?
Well, there are all kinds of different things. It's just a matter of putting yourself into a place where it's safer and healthier to express
it. It's a matter of taste, too. I mean, people do different things, too, as far as an outlet to release aggression.
Yeah.
I mean, my obvious choice, I mean, I'm a musician, so I play music. And at a lot of times, that's where I try to filter out a lot of that anger I have and a lot of that resentment or things that pop up in my life, what you're talking about. But I would honestly say it's a matter of taste, too. I mean, that's what I would see, to do it in a more productive manner besides just beating on something, what you're talking about.
Everything inside you can be... It can be healthy, it can be productive, but it's often a challenge to find that best approach. And that's what life is all about, finding, you know, meeting that challenge, being your own best self.
I agree.
What do you talk about in it? Because you've published now two books, right?
Right.
What do you talk about in the first one and then the second one so that we can get an idea of how, you know, like, are they like sequel kinds of things, or are they...
They are similar, yeah. I think of them as like two sides of the same coin. They both discuss... my theories about death and the afterlife, which have come from the binary soul doctrine. The only difference would be the first book is geared more toward a conventional Judeo-Christian audience, and the second book is geared more toward a secular audience. But in both books, it describes my rediscovery of the binary soul doctrine. And this gets us back to your question that started it all off, about the Jewish belief that the soul divides apart into pieces when you die. I look back in the cultural traditions of of different peoples and races and tribes and nations all over the world, and I found a very curious thing. I found that 2, 3, 4,000 years ago, everybody on the planet believed something very, very similar. They believed that people have two parts to their soul, and those two parts divide apart at death, and each go off into a separate afterlife experience. And I found that in a number of those cultures, they describe those two parts to the self the same way that modern science is now describing the conscious and the unconscious, or the right brain and the left brain. And that is a very scary thing, because if those ancient cultures were true, then at death, our minds, our conscious and unconscious, will actually divide apart at death. Now, I find this very interesting only because that theory, that the two halves of the mind divide apart at death, seems to explain an awful lot about what we hear about different kinds of afterlife phenomena. It explains an awful lot of the stuff we hear about ghosts. It explains an awful lot of the stuff we hear about near-death experiences, past life regression, and poltergeists, and a whole bunch of stuff.
That's exactly what we like to talk about, ghosts and afterlife and things like that. So, but I have a more simple question that popped up in my head. This isn't like necessarily then the good and the evil parts of you. This is more, one pretty much whole self and another pretty much whole self. Because if you're talking conscious and subconscious, then you're talking whole selves that divide off into places, and they take with them whatever are parts of you at the time. And so it's like a whole self conscious and a whole self subconscious.
I don't like the whole conscious, the whole unconscious divides apart, but I don't see them as wholes. I would say that the whole is the thing that they create when they are together, the you that you are right now. That is the whole. And when they divide apart, all you have is parts. All you have is bits and pieces. And that's why so much what we hear, what we see about afterlife phenomena, seems to describe beings that are psychologically disturbed, psychologically disoriented. Like, for instance, you see ghosts are very often being described as being walking around in a semi-conscious state. They're not really aware of what's going on around them. They keep on doing the same damn things over and over and over again, and it looks to me like they are just walking around inside their own dreams, reliving their experiences again and again and again. They walk through walls. That never wakes them up. They never realize, hey, I just walked through a wall. What's going on here? That, to me, is talking about a being that has lost touch with reality. It's a being that is walking around in his own unconscious mind, no longer has a conscious mind that has discrimination and rationality and logic. All they have left is their feelings, their emotions, and their automatic behavior. And that's exactly what you would expect if it was unconscious that no longer had its conscious mind.
Okay, well, you're heading to a residual haunting, more or less. What about poltergeist effects, though?
This is very interesting. I believe that an awful lot of the material you hear about poltergeists makes me think that a poltergeist is a conscious mind that has separated from its unconscious. Are not caught inside their own memories. On the other hand, instead of being focused on their own memories, a poltergeist is usually completely focused on their external surroundings. They're completely focused on interacting with the people and places around them. Completely unlike a ghost that completely ignores the people around them. The ghost, or the poltergeist, is totally focused on interacting with the people around them. And very often, they seem to be trying to, get a rise out of people.
Yeah, they seem to be very mischievous.
They seem to be very, very mischievous. Now, I believe that this is because they are a conscious mind that has separated from its unconscious. In your unconscious is where all your memories are. And when you lose your memories, you lose your sense of self-identity. And so these are wandering around. They have free will, because free will is in the conscious mind. That means they can do things. A poltergeist, it comes and goes as it will. It's completely unpredictable. It won't be there, and it'll show up for a while, and then it'll disappear, and you'll never hear from it again.
Uh-huh.
While it's there, it does completely unpredictable things. A ghost, on the other hand, is always doing the same thing. It's always in the same place. It's exactly what you'd expect from something that was behaving automatically as opposed to having free will.
What then would the spirit be? Is there a spot in this vernacular for the spirit?
Well, I would say yes. I would say that under the binary soul doctrine, there are basically three ways that you can end up when you're dead. There are three elements that can exist after you die. One would be an unconscious without a conscious. One would be a conscious without an unconscious. And one would be a person where their mind had not split apart. They were still whole. And the only difference was they didn't have a body anymore. And I believe you do find reports about that. You can find them very often in reports of apparitions of the dead, where people will come back within 6 months to a year after they die and reappear to their family members. And in these cases, they're not ghosts, because they're not walking around unconsciously automatically. They are aware of themselves. They are aware of their surroundings. They are interacting with people that they meet. I believe that these are spiritual success stories, people that survive the transition from life to death without their minds dividing apart.
Is it natural then to, what is the most natural progression then? Like when I pass on, is it, it's not good if I become a, you know, a subconscious without a conscious or a conscious without a subconscious, but it would be, you know, beneficial to my soul, my spirit, to become a spirit, to not divide, or how?
I think division is the worst possible thing.
Oh, okay.
I think that, you know, Egypt, with all its huge monuments and buildings, and its entire culture was devoted to pursuing and achieving its religious aims of surviving death. And I think that their entire effort was, they called the two souls the Ba and the Ka.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that their entire effort, that huge, huge effort of their entire society was geared toward one goal, and that was to prevent the division of the two halves of the mind at death.
Awesome. I can't wait to talk about this more, but we do have to go to break.
We need to take a quick break here, Peter.
We're going to go to break, and I think I'm getting it.
Yeah.
And I know that listeners are getting it because I can see in the chat room.
Yes.
So we'll talk with you a little bit more after this break.
Hang on the line. We'll
I'm Doug.
Right. I'm Scott L.
We'll talk to you shortly.
Peter Novak's in the house.
Yes, he's in the house. He's on the phone talking with us about ghosts and
the binary soul doctrine.
Yes, the binary soul doctrine.
Fascinating stuff.
Exactly. The thing that I had a question about is, you know, Ghostly Talk is done by a couple of, it started out, it was just a couple of guys, me and Scott L., who would get together in the basement and talk about ghost hunting, because that's what we did. That was our hobby, and still is, uh-huh. when we can go out.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, it's not in vain. I mean, because what I'm hearing, because I've learned a lot over the two, almost 2 years, and some people say, oh, it could, you know, what you're doing could be in vain, because that just might be some phenomena, you know. But the binary soul doctrine and what you're saying is, it may not be in vain. There really are ghosts. They're hanging out. Some are actually trying to contact us, like in the case of poltergeists. So when we go out with our cameras and our recording equipment and stuff like that, we're actually really looking for them, and they're really looking for us too, right?
When you're looking for ghosts, when you find them, what you are doing is encountering the saddest story in history. You are encountering these souls, these separated, unconscious minds are completely trapped in that reality that they're in. They have no conscious mind. They have no objective awareness. They have no rational intellect. All they have is their emotions and their feelings and their memories, and they are trapped within them, repeating their own memories and their own feelings again and again and again forever, and there's no way for them to get free on their own. There are a few ways they can be freed from that reality. Different cultures have had, different shamanic cultures have, whether the shamans, they go out and they do what they call soul retrievals, and that's where they go and they rescue these lost souls, these ghostly beings trapped, and they free them, and they reconnect them up with their conscious minds again so they can get on with the rest of their reality, rest of their eternity. There are a couple other ways to rescue them. There are some psychics nowadays that claim to be able to do the same thing. There are some out-of-body experience experts that claim to be able to do the same thing. There is a place in Virginia called the Monroe Institute, and they use a certain kind of sound technology that they claim can teach people how to have out-of-body experiences. And one of the major focuses of that institute is that after they teach people how to have these out-of-body experiences, they send them out to find these lost souls of the dead and free them from their state of being trapped and alone and abandoned within their own minds. Binary soul doctrine states that everybody that divides apart at death, that's the way they stay until they are acted upon by an outside force. The Buddhists believe that you can do this yourself. If you go back, you can find your own past, your past selves, previous lives, and reincorporate them back into your being. I believe that the early Christians had something very similar, although the Roman Church ended up putting an X on that pretty good.
Well, from what I've seen, from what you've been talking about, you talked it many years ago, the basis of religion is what you were talking about.
Huh?
Is it, and I'm not trying to slam on anybody again, I'm going to get sued by somebody else, is it the fact that I've heard you hinted this a couple times already, where just a second ago, where the Catholic Church kind of put a muzzle on that, kind of stopped that? Is that, I mean, I have my opinions, and I'll keep them myself right now. Is this that religion itself has changed over the time, over the years, to try to null out something like this, to control, more or less?
Everything, you know, everything changes, but first of all, yes, I do believe that the Christian Church originally believed in the binary soul doctrine. Now, I've never really finished explaining what the binary soul doctrine is.
Okay.
Oh, that's a good idea.
We'll do that.
Let me do that real quick. The binary soul doctrine basically says that the two halves of the being, the conscious and the unconscious, divide apart at death. One half basically becomes trapped in a heavenly or hellish experience. Sometimes they are seen by others, and they look like ghosts when they are seen, but they are basically trapped within their own memories. They create their own fantasies out of their own memories and out of their own emotions and out of their own dreams, but they're basically isolated beings. But while that half of the mind does that, the other half of the mind does something completely different. It reincarnates. The other half of the mind, the spirit, the unconscious I basically identify as the soul, and the conscious I identify as the spirit. And I believe the spirit goes on to reincarnate again, and it has a whole new life. And in that life, it cuts off part of itself, and that part of the self is the soul, and it starts its own, you know, dream world fantasy that lasts throughout eternity too. So basically, we're reincarnating and reincarnating and reincarnating and cutting off parts and bits of ourselves at the end of every incarnation. And that's the problem. The problem is that these parts of ourselves that we're cutting off, they're not just dead nothing. They're parts of us, and they still continue to exist, still continue to experience. And until we reconnect them, we are fractured beings. We are not whole. We are not complete. And, you know, that's basically why you see the world is in the state it's in, because a bunch of incomplete beings trying to run the world.
Is there a way to actively seek out those parts of you that that are trapped?
Yes, there are. It's called soul retrieval, and there's quite a few different cultural and scientific approaches to achieve that end. One is very simple. It's past life regression. You get hypnotized, you go back, you find your previous self, you start reincorporating that into your being. The Buddhists have been doing that for years. They call it the Jiva Mala, and they believe that a person can reconnect with and reincorporate hundreds of their own past life selves within one lifetime. Shamanic soul retrieval specialist, which is something that was almost dying out 20 years ago, but now it's on the rebound around the world. These would be, you'd be like a psychic person, I guess we'd understand them today. They will go out for you and find your past self and bring it back to you. And there's a lot of other different ways, but basically the same goal is involved. It's
Hello? How come I don't hear Peter anymore?
Everything died?
Yeah.
Everything died.
Does that mean everything, including the server?
No, the server's still watching.
The phone's dead.
Why is the phone dead?
I have no idea.
Uh-oh. That's not good.
No, that's not very good at all.
We just lost a caller.
Yes, we did.
We lost an important caller who was telling us all about...
Yeah.
I saw all the lights flash on the phone.
Yeah. Why don't we go to another break and set the phone on fire and set the whole house on fire and run out of here with our clothes on and kill everybody.
There's a plan.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. I don't think that would work. It wouldn't actually bring Peter Novak back on the telephone. So what we have to do is we have to try and get him back on the phone.
Okay.
Oh. Peter?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh,
we don't know what happened. We're really sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
We're sitting here like looking at everything going, okay, what died? What died on us? What's going on here?
Because we were listening and totally enraptured by the by that, and then the and then I heard a click.
Yeah, and everything went dead.
No way.
I'm not sure how long I talked before. I'm really...
That's the worst thing. Like, oh, man, he's probably still talking right now. Oh, no. Oh, boy, what are we going to do? Okay, so I'll go where we left off.
All right, where did I leave off?
Okay, let's find out. Oh, my God.
Did you hear the part about the soul retrieval special?
Yes, that's exactly
what we talked about, that because we were going through how to go about getting these fractured bits and pieces back.
Right.
And you had gone over, I think the last one was
the shamanistic
that is on the rebound. And then right after that, boom, everything went dead on our telephone.
Yes.
Well, now, I wanted to explain the binary soul doctrine, or define it more clearly,
before
I went on to explain answer the question that you had. I believe it had to do with religion.
Yeah,
yes.
What was that question exactly?
Well, really, it's just simply stating, I mean, is religion today trying to put a cap on these things you're talking about?
Right. I believe that the early Christian church believed in the binary soul doctrine. There are some very, very interesting scriptures that surfaced from very early Christianity. They surfaced in 1945 in Nag Hammadi, Egypt, and they are very interesting. They are scriptures that the church was never able to edit, and that's very interesting. If you look at them, you'll find
really
the soul doctrine is very, very evident within their scriptures. They talk about having the soul and the spirit, and the soul and the spirit dividing apart, and the goal of reality is to unite them, make the two one. Early Christianity, I believe, gave people two choices, two options, two promises. One was that, okay, if you unite your soul and your spirit while you're alive, if you achieve complete integrity while you're alive, then when you die, you will not divide apart. You will become a spiritual success story. You will achieve complete and permanent immortality. That was one of the promises. The other promise was, okay, even if you don't make it that far, even if you don't achieve complete soul-spirit union while you're alive, you can still lock in your immortality if you become a Christian, because Jesus did something that made it possible for him to achieve unite your soul and spirit on down the road. So they gave two options. Now the church did not like those two options, so they basically jettisoned the binary soul doctrine, because in order to maintain control and maintain authority, they didn't want you to have the option of taking care of your own problems. They wanted to be in charge And so they jettisoned the idea about uniting your own soul and spirit. They said, well, you have to rely on Jesus altogether.
And that makes sense with all the things that I've studied about churches and the way they work is that they want you to they want that control.
Yes.
Well, this was really it was predictable because the church was basically it was achieving a lot of strength, a lot of power, a lot of authority, and it was challenging the authorities of the Roman Empire. And the Roman Empire had a choice. It could either fight the church or it could unite with the church. It chose to unite with the church. And at that time, it started seeing the church as a method of control of the masses. And so it used it to that end very successfully.
Was this back in like the early or mid-1600s when all that stuff was going on in England?
Back in the 4th century.
Oh, okay, so in the 500s or something? Because I know that the church gained a huge amount of socio-political power in the 1600s.
It consolidated its power continuously, basically up until Martin Luther nailed the pages on the church door, and then everything fell apart after that.
Wow. Okay. So you mentioned the Monroe Institute.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I want to get back to that real quick because that is of particular interest to me. And you're the second guest who's mentioned the Monroe Institute. Back in high school, I read Robert Monroe's books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one of my goals, I really, really wanted to go down to the Monroe Institute because it's not that far from Michigan. And I wanted to go there, and I had read some of the books before the Monroe Institute came into effect, you know, actually was made, and then afterwards, because it was about that time when I was in high school that he was creating the Monroe Institute.
Right.
Have you been there, first of all?
I have been there as a visitor, but I have not taken any of their courses. But I've talked with a lot of people who have. I think that I have some familiarity with what they propose to do.
And you're right about the music thing. You know, they try to incorporate music and sounds and stuff like that into projecting yourself out of the body.
The interesting thing I find about that is that they use a certain rhythmic beat in order to put the brain into the right alpha, theta waves, whatever. But the interesting is they use a monaural beat. And that is exactly the same thing that shamans, witch doctors all over the planet used to put themselves in a trance. The same thing, a monaural beat.
Right, with the chanting and the drums and that kind of thing.
They try to achieve the same result. They try to separate their minds from their bodies and go off on out-of-body experiences.
And do you have out-of-body experiences?
No, I am a researcher. I haven't had a single supernatural experience in my own life that I know of.
Oh, you got to hang with us. We can provide you some because I've run into some. But I have a question. These out-of-body experiences, because I believe I've had several.
Uh-huh.
You know, not like 10 or 20, but more like 2 or 3. And are they natural? Do both halves of my mind go out and do whatever it is they do during the experience? Or is that just part of my mind?
My answer would be part of your mind. However, until you're dead, I don't believe that the two halves of the mind completely separate. I think there's always a certain amount of interaction and communication going on between them. But no, it's just part of your main mind for the most part. The Indians, American Indians, along with many, many other cultures, they used to think that we had two parts to ourselves, and only one of those parts they thought would be able to go off. The Indians called their two souls the bodily soul and the dreaming soul. I think it was the free soul. It was the free soul. And they believed that the free soul was able to leave the body while you're alive and wandered around, occasionally. If they believe that it often did it while you're asleep, and they believe that shamans were able to control and direct that function. They were able to make the free soul go when and where they wanted it to.
So when your free soul, or when you're the part of your mind that can go out and about and do these things, when it's out there, they're really you're not going. Just having that happen is not really any kind of near death experience or anything. You're not really in danger of fracturing at that time.
Oh, I don't think you're in any more danger then than you would be in the other time. As long as your physical body is safe, then you're okay. I also believe that a very similar thing, a divided consciousness, also occurs during near-death experiences, and I devote a whole chapter in my book to describing and explaining how all of the details that we commonly hear about near-death experiences are completely explainable by the hypothesis that the conscious and the unconscious divide apart at death.
Well, and you've got examples, right?
Oh, yeah, I have a lot of examples. The interesting thing about my book is in my first book, this was all theory. And I had an awful lot of data from an awful lot of different sources to back up my theory. My second book, I had something much, much better. In The Lost Secret of Death, I have a number of stories of people, near-death experiencers, who actually experienced their mind dividing apart into two different these two halves of themselves occasionally even interacted with each other during the experience. They are very, very fascinating stories, and I strongly encourage everyone to go and buy my book and read them.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I know I will.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of stuff that I study. That's my whole hobby, studying things.
The divided soul, near-death experiences that I'm so proud of, really, is that, okay, near-death experience research has been going on now for probably close to 30 years, ever since Raymond Moody's first book was written, I believe it was back in the mid-70s.
Mm-hmm.
And there has been an awful lot of research done, an awful lot of reports and communication and correspondence. You know, there's a whole subculture devoted to near-death experiences going on right now. But until my research came out, no one identified the divided soul near-death experience as being an actual subset of the whole phenomenon. So I have brought a whole new element of that whole phenomenon to the fore.
How common is it to experience both parts, both parts of the soul when...
Yeah, I believe it is 100% common to experience them, and maybe only 2% common to remember, or to, let's see, a better way would... Very, very few people remember dividing apart into two parts, but I believe that an awful lot of the reports, they come back of the people, that they'll say, no, I didn't divide apart that. But if you analyze their reports, if you analyze what they actually say, you'll see that their interpretation may have been off. They may have divided apart and didn't even realize at the time. I mean, if you have two halves of your mind divide apart and come back together again, well, you're talking a potential for some serious mental confusion. And
so just like when you see things with your visual cortex and your eyes and things like that, your body or your brain actually puts it together into an image, into one image, but you're seeing two images, and your brain deals with it to give your mind some, you know, the information in, you know, as a visual picture that you can see.
That's the same thing that happens with the mind. You know, we have the conscious and the unconscious. We have the left brain and the right brain, and they are separate. Just like the left eye and the right eye is separate, but in our experience, these two elements are integrated. They're united together to create a single experience. It's the experience of the two that together are one. And I point that out because that idea, the two which together create one, was very, very fundamental in ancient Egyptian culture and religion and philosophy. That their whole culture was wrapped around the idea of a united duality. They thought that was their perfection, the ultimate perfection of nature, was when nature created a united duality. And I think that that's what we're all trying to achieve. That's what our minds achieve while we're alive. We have the two halves of the mind, give us the impression of one mind. We have the two eyes that give the impression of one vision. We have the male and the female that come together and create a new life. I think that all over the universe, we see the two equal but opposite elements of reality that are always struggling to unite and create this new third thing.
And
wow.
I totally can see that. I have that in my experience. I can see what you're talking about. But we have to go to break again.
Yes.
So we're going to do that, and then we'll be back with the last segment and with this absolutely amazing guest, Peter Novak, who's written the second of three books.
Yes.
So we'll be talking more with him after the break. I'm Doug.
And I'm Scott L. We'll be right back.
You have tools. Know where to put them? Want your hands free to do other things? Try a stagehand tool belt. Stagehand tool belts can accommodate any task, whether you're building a stage or bringing down a haunted house.
Stagehand tools.
For all your industry needs, we have, for example, EMT pumps, radio pumps, tape measure holders, mailbag, and numerous flashlight accessories. Just go to
www.stagehandtools.com.
And see all the cool stuff that Stagehand Tools has for you.
www.stagehandtools.com.
We know where to stick it.
Hello, this is Aaron.
This is Donovan.
And something very dark would like you to listen to Ghost Reader.
Okay.
Fascinating. Ah! Fascinating stuff. Yeah, because we got to talk with you through the break, Peter, and
wow,
we're just like we're on the floor, we're amazed.
Oh man,
absolutely amazed. Because the first thing I started off is I'm like, ooh, what's it like at the Monroe Institute, you know? And then we just went from there. It was an awesome 8 minutes during that break.
Yeah.
So I have to say thank you so much. What were we talking about?
I wanted to talk about this whole story again with the Jewish story about the whole dividing of bits and pieces.
Yes.
I want to talk about that a little bit. There's many different cultures that believe that the soul divided apart into bits and pieces. I believe that at the dawn of Christianity, when, you know, Christianity and Judaism were basically one religion, I think that they thought there were only two souls. There was only two parts that divided, two parts, and they would divide apart. And then Judaism went one direction, Christianity went the other direction, and what happened? Judaism decided that there were more than two souls. They started talking about three and four and five different pieces. Christianity, on the other hand, decided, no, it's not two, there's really only one. You know, we can call them soul, we can call them spirit, but it's really just the same thing.
So they went from one extreme where they're agreeing, you know, with that, each other and even the ancient Egyptians and everything like that. Everyone's in agreement. They went from that to completely going
in opposite directions.
Yeah.
Jewish belief today reminds me a lot of what the ancient Egyptians believed. If you look superficially at reports about Egyptian theology, you'll hear people saying that the Egyptians believed in five souls or six souls or seven souls. But if you look more closely, you'll find that they only talk about two of those souls actually surviving after death, the Ba and the Ka. All those other parts and bits and pieces, well, they don't survive. They don't continue on. Now, the Ba and the Ka, they would exist separately if divided apart, but if they united together, then they would form a new thing, a new soul. And that new soul they call the Ak, A-H-K. I believe it was A-K-H. So they actually talk about three souls in ancient Egypt, but basically they talk about the two souls separately and then give them a name, but if they unite together, then they call them by a different name. Believe that Judaism had something very similar. They talk about the soul and the spirit, but then they also talk about, well, they have a name for the soul and the spirit if they unite together. I'm trying to find it in my book here. let's see. Judaism calls the soul and the spirit the nefesh and the ruah, but they also call, when the soul and the spirit unite together, they call it third name, which I'm looking in my book, I'm not finding.
Yeah, under pressure it happens like that all
yeah.
the time.
What was that?
Anyway, it's in there, I'm just not running to the right page. Anyway, Judaism, the Bible, let's go back to the Bible, it talks about they have three different names for the soul in the Old Testament. And two of those souls are for the soul and the spirit. And the third is translated half the time as soul and half the time as spirit. So it's kind of like a term that overlaps the two. I believe that reflects an earlier version of Judaism where they believe that the two souls could exist separately or united together.
Fascinating.
Because we talk a lot about out-of-body experiences, and I don't know if we want to go more into that, or because I would like to. Because that's one of the things that I personally am, you know.
One of my experiences are really cool because if you can achieve one, that would be you know, your own personal confirmation that yes, I am going to survive after this body kicks the bucket.
And everybody is. I mean, when people come back from, we were talking about this, when people come back from the Monroe Institute, or when people have a near death experience, or when people have a spontaneous out of the body experience, they are then not only believers, but you had said, they, you know, they're experiencers. They've experienced.
Right. They no longer have to rely on belief. They know.
Because they've done it.
They've done it, yeah. It's their own personal experience. Christianity, early Christianity, was divided into two parts. They were the knowers and they were the believers. The believers were the Catholic Church, the Roman Church. There was another part called the Gnostics, and they were the knowers. They did not claim to have to rely on assumption or belief. They believed that through a baptism that they claim to have inherited directly from Jesus, being passed down from Jesus to the next person, to the next person, to the next person. They claim to have personal, first-hand knowledge and experience of spiritual realms. I believe that had an awful lot to do with out-of-body experiences. I believe it went farther than that, but I believe it had a lot to do with that.
Well, the whole thing about baptism in particular, isn't that where they, you know, try to drown you or something? Don't they used to actually dip you in the water.
Well, yeah.
Yes, but, okay, this is interesting. I don't know if we have time to get into all this. Interesting thing about baptism, if you look back in the original term for baptism, the term meant immersion. And I don't believe they were talking about immersion in water. I believe that that was, they were originally referring to a spiritual cleansing process where you would immerse yourself in your own soul and experience all of your feelings and all of your emotions. And here, this goes back to how we started the conversation. You immerse yourself in everything that you had tried to repress yourself all your life long.
Now, that's interesting, because I think that's the first time I've ever heard that, but it makes a lot of sense.
There are an awful lot of religious traditions on the planet today. Not too many of them in the Western cultures, but a lot of them in the Eastern cultures and some of the new emerging stuff from Native American religion that have spiritual cleansing processes that basically do the same thing. You go within. You find all your spiritual garbage that you have been building up all your life and never acknowledging, never experiencing, never allowing yourself to feel. Basically, it's a matter of guilt. And I think that if you look at the actual term for baptism, a baptism of repentance for the forgiveness of sins, that's what Jesus was talking about. You go back, and every time you did something bad, you know, that you yourself, you knew you had, you never allowed yourself to feel the guilt for it. And all that baptism was originally was going back into your mind, into your memory, into your unconscious, and bridging up all those feelings that you refused to allow yourself to feel. Then once you allow yourself to feel them, they disappear. They go away. They don't bother you anymore, and you suddenly, wow, become a healthier, more integrated, more spiritually whole person.
Hence the importance of the term, know thyself.
Yeah, exactly right. The Greeks knew it. All the ancient traditions knew it.
Well, that seems to parallel the thing we started. Well, I think you said it already.
It seems
to parallel what we were talking about an hour ago, hour and 15 minutes ago.
Oh, about being a whole person.
Yeah, and acknowledging your thoughts, not trying to suppress them.
Right.
Same thing with your sins.
My own self be true.
Exactly.
Now, that's old news, but it's not outdated. That's still what it's all about.
It still applies.
It still applies.
Yeah.
I agree.
Okay. I'm so depressed because we've only got, like, 11 minutes.
I know.
And I've got a billion questions.
Well,
one.
I want to pick one. Let me pick one. I want a question. We've talked about, you know, the sadness of going out and about and trying to capture spirit photography and stuff like that. What about voices of the dead? They can come to you several different ways. They can come to you in dreams. They can come to you as EVP, the electronic voice phenomena that we try to capture on digital and analog tape recorders. What about voices? Are those, you know, spirits or souls, or are they part of? Because sometimes, quite often, EVP hollers, it's giving your own name, you know, like, you didn't hear it with your ears, but it shows up on tape, or you hear it in your dreams. Is that a real phenomenon? Is that...
I think it could be. I don't think you could definitely say, you know, that that's from a soul or from a spirit or from a whole person. It could be any of the above. Usually ghosts don't talk, they don't communicate. They don't communicate verbally. Because a ghost, I would say, is a spirit unconscious. And the unconscious is nonverbal. So for the most part, you would probably want to eliminate that. I think an awful lot of those could be a whole being that has survived the transition to death. They did not divide apart. If their communication seems to be coherent, if they're making sense, if they seem to be aware of their surroundings, they're trying to communicate with you, they recognize you, they recognize who they are, the actual communication makes sense. That's probably a spiritual success story. That's someone that did not divide apart death. But there's another thing that could also be taking place. If it was a poltergeist, if it was a conscious mind that had separated from its unconscious.
And if it does not make very much sense, because you know what? Most of the EVPs that I've heard they don't make all that much sense.
I would say that's the same kind of thing that you find in poltergeist situations. Very often, poltergeists, well, more often than ghosts anyway, they do communicate verbally. But very often the communications don't make a lot of sense. It's like a lot of disconnected words or phrases, whatever. And my personal theory is the poltergeist does not have an unconscious of its own, but it can look into yours, and it can take bits and pieces, and it tries to throw them back at you. But without an unconscious, it really doesn't understand what it's doing. It's kind of like a playful monkey or an animal that is trying to interact with you, but just really doesn't get the whole picture.
And perceptions, of course, are it's hard, like, we talked briefly about out-of-body perceptions being distorted and not, you know, not really able to make sense because you are divided at that point in time. But the perceptions of that poltergeist or of that part of the soul that's out there, its perceptions are necessarily warped as well then, right?
Certainly. Now, another thing you have to also throw into the mix is that here we are walking around in three-dimensional bodies. We only see a very small section of the entire spectrum of reality. When these beings, whether they're souls, separated souls or separated spirits, whether they're whole entities, think a lot of OBEs, out-of-body experiences, these people, they come back and they describe this and they describe that, and it seems off-kilter somehow, and we say, well, you know, they're not really making a lot of sense. I don't think you saw what you thought you saw, but I think that maybe we're mistaken because there may be more dimensions out there, and they're describing a dimension that isn't quite the one that we think we're looking at.
Oh, and that makes a lot of sense because, I mean, they are talking about multidimensional and many universes, and even in hard science, they're talking about that.
Yeah, it's coming around. It's being verified.
It's about time. Ben, let's talk about a real case.
Okay.
I want to talk about the Bell Witch.
Ah.
This is just very briefly, it was a powerful entity of some kind, and they nicknamed her Kate. And she basically terrorized primarily a family.
Yes.
Down in Tennessee, but all in Adams, Tennessee, but also the whole town. I don't think she ever materialized into a being or anything. But she did do the music. She echoed a preacher's sermon in a completely different part of the town. While it was happening at the
existing time. Basically, she interacted.
She interacted.
I would describe her as a poltergeist, which I think I would identify as a conscious mind that had separated from its unconscious. Very commonly, another distinction between ghosts and poltergeists. Ghosts are usually seen. Poltergeists very rarely allow themselves to be seen, or maybe it's that they're not capable of being seen. I think that they're not capable of being seen because they do not have a self-image. They've lost their unconscious that has the memories of who they were.
But what's interesting is, though, Kate, of the Bell Witch story, she seems to be in control of her faculties. I mean, she seemed to know what she was doing, and unfortunately for the town and the family she terrorized, revel in it.
Yeah, poltergeists very, very commonly seem to enjoy irritating those around them. And I think that is actually a classic... It's a sign that's pointing toward our conscious separating from its unconscious. Because a conscious mind on its own is objective. It doesn't have any subjective aspects to it. It doesn't see any connections between people. It doesn't see any similarities. It doesn't see relationships. All it sees is distinctions between things and separateness. And I believe a conscious mind on its own would be the ultimate alienated being because it would not be able to perceive any connections between itself and other people. It would feel completely alone and isolated and separated. And it would act like the ultimate isolated, alienated being. It would be mad at the world. It would be saying to the world, get away from me, you don't exist, or you're not worthy, or you have no value to me. That's exactly what poltergeists do very, 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 very much.
Because they're very objective. Well, what about demons or other kinds of entities that may not have ever been human? Are there any of, is there anything like that in the binary soul field?
Maybe. I don't know for sure.
I know BSD is particularly interested in the human soul, right?
It is, but there is one interesting aspect of it that could produce some interesting phenomena. Carl Jung had a very interesting hypothesis that said that there is a part of the mind that is the collective unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's correct, then all these separated souls, these separate unconscious minds, would all end up in that same location. Now, the interesting thing is about the unconscious is it tends to make like join with like. In your dreams, your Uncle Art may also be your math teacher from fifth grade because, the unconscious sees there's a connection there, so it unites the two together. If that process is reliable, then in the collective unconscious, all those separated souls could theoretically unite into a single homogeneous mass based on elements that they had in common. So, theoretically, all of the separate unconscious souls of humanity that had similar attributes could unite together. Now, if all of the most evil people, when they die, their separated souls united together, that could produce demons. That could produce something very similar to what we think of as the devil.
Oh, my gosh.
I do not know that that's the case, but the theory does seem to support that as a possible reality.
And that is, that's truly scary. But that's a topic for another time, because you know what? I think we're pretty much out of time.
Yeah.
I want you to, we've got like a minute and a half left. I want to know, what is your website?
Very easy. My website is divisiontheory.com.
Divisiontheory.com.
Check it out.
Yes,
there's a lot to read on there, too.
Yeah, and we'll put a link, of course.
A lot to read on there. I decided, when I discovered this, I thought it was important. I wrote some books, and yeah, I like people to buy my books, but I'm not here mostly to make money. I want to get this information out. I think it's important. I think this is a huge breakthrough in our understanding of religion, understand of psychology, understand of life after death, and I think the world needs to know. So I put an awful lot of material free of charge on that website.
There's a ton to read on it.
DivisionTheory.com.
Definitely check it out.
And we'll put a link on GhostlyTalk.com, of course, because now we've got that new links, you know, guest.
Yeah. Everybody, every guest that comes on the show gets a link.
Yes. And I do want to talk more with you, Peter, on other shows, if at all possible, because this goes directly to the core of what I do, what my hobby is, why I'm doing Ghostly
Talk. There's a lot to relate to on this also.
Yeah, and I can see, in reality, a lot of stuff that you're saying. So I have to say thank you so much, Peter.
Thank you for having me.
And with that, I guess we have to end the show.
Yeah.
So sad, but I'm, you know, we'll be back next week with, with Heidi Hollis.
Heidi Hollis will be
here. UFO, or alienadvice.com.
Yes.
Heidi Hollis. So so we'll be talking about UFOs and aliens with her next week. For now, I'm Doug.
And I'm Scott Allen. This was Ghostly Talk.
Science will not deny the existence of things because they cannot be weighed and measured. It will rather lead us to believe that the wonders and subtleties of possible existence surpass all that our mental powers allow us clearly to perceive.
We must ignore no existence whatsoever. We may variously interpret or explain its meaning and origin, but if a phenomenon does exist, it demands some kind of explanation.
A quote from the Principles of Science.